This is Crossroads, a Get Religion podcast.
Two recent tweets from Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. The Southern Baptist Convention Executive Committee just disfellowshipped two churches for affirmation of homosexuality. Another tweet, the Southern Baptist Convention Committee also disfellowshipped two churches for harboring convicted sex offenders. More detail to follow. These actions are necessary and proper. So what happened there in the executive committee of the Southern Baptist Convention? What does it mean to be disfellowshipped? And how are the media covering both of these disfellowshipping incidents? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
What can all church leaders learn from how the media is covering these expulsions by the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention?
Well, first of all, we can learn, once again, the degree to which sexuality is the flashpoint in American religion and to some degree in politics as well. And what we really see here is that church leaders are going to have to think through what they're saying about sexuality, both in their public statements, from their pulpits, but also in the documents that define their churches. And that's true even in the Southern Baptist Convention, which is not supposed to be a church with a creed or anything like that. They do have the Baptist Faith and Message Statement, which has been around in various forms for decades. And it turns out that, you know, that has ended up playing a small role in the coverage of this story. And it's an important story, but there are, this was a whopper of an executive committee meeting for the Southern Baptist Convention. There was all kind of news there. And like you said, it's significant that the gay rights cases, which are really, frankly, not that surprising when you sit down and actually look at the details, it is interesting that that's getting the attention. And the fact that it got the attention in a way that some would question the accuracy of it in a story for the Associated Press. The Associated Press, of course, is the wire service that goes out to almost every newsroom in America and around the world, which means that what the Associated Press writes to some degree is going to become the normal story about this event. And that's why we're talking about it.
So what does it mean in Baptist parlance? You yourself are a former Baptist of some pedigree. What does it mean in Baptist parlance when a congregation is disfellowshipped?
Well, it's really hard to get thrown out of the Southern Baptist Convention. I mean, for the simple fact that you have local associations, of which my father used to be the executive of one of them, you have local associations which kind of function more like a diocese, you know, to put that, or a presbytery, to put that over into other language, or a convention for a regional convention for Methodists. And then you have a state convention, and in several states of the Union now, at least two that I can think of, we have more than one Southern Baptist Convention, because you have the moderates and you have the conservatives who run the major national denomination and the splits that go back to the late 70s and 80s, except they're not really splits because Southern Baptist polity exists at the local congregational level. That's the really crucial one. And you remember we've talked about that during all of the Church II sex abuse cases and the legal, what the convention can legally do or not, and that's another part of this executive committee meeting. And to make a long story short, with this local, then state, and then national level structure, it takes a really, really clear issue and people willing to make a fight over it for a church to get to the point of being disfellowshipped, to where it's no longer recognized as a Southern Baptist congregation by the national church. And I would assume you can also get disfellowshipped at the associational level locally. And I assume in the history, I'd be stunned if there haven't been some disassociated at the state level. To some degree, though, you have to run the table and get kicked out, association, state, and national, to, you know, to be absolutely, totally gone.
Now, you said that the AP story, which is, as you mentioned, the way most people are going to see this thing, was not entirely accurate. What do you mean by that?
Okay. It's an issue of wording, of course, how you describe what Southern Baptists believe. And whether you want to quote what the Southern Baptists believe or whether you want to paraphrase that into language that you think describes the situation. So let me read a section of that AP story. Divisions over race, politics, gender, and LGBTQ issues are rolling America's largest Protestant denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention. Notice they use the word denomination, which Baptists would not appreciate, ahead of a meeting of its executive committee next week. Here comes the wording. On the agenda are two items reflecting those divisions. A recommendation that a church in Kennesaw, Georgia, be ousted from the SBC because it accepted LGBTQ people into its congregation, contravening Southern Baptist doctrine. Well, the word accepted is loaded there, but the main thing, Southern Baptist would say they were not, this was not about whether you accepted LGBTQ people into the congregation, because there are gays and lesbians in this world who are a member of conservative congregations like Catholic churches and Orthodox churches and whatever, and they still believe the teaching of those churches. We can come back to this. But these people exist, and they're important, and they have voices, and they have complaints about the church that are different than others. But is it really accurate to say these churches were disfellowshipped because they accepted LGBTQ people or because they accepted gay or lesbian people who got married in a same-sex union that violates Baptist doctrine, and the fact that they're in a marriage implies that they are willfully and consistently sexually active outside of traditional marriage, biblical marriage, from the viewpoint of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Roman Catholic Church, and millions of other believers in the world. So is the real issue whether or not you accepted them, or that you kind of accepted them on their doctrinal terms when it comes to marriage and sexual acts outside of marriage? In other words, could you have worded this? This church was ousted from the SBC because it accepted a couple that was sexually active outside of marriage, at which point you can then hear howls of protest and says, the issue wasn't that they were a couple that was sexually active outside of marriage. The issue was that they were a gay couple that was sexually active. And see, that raises an interesting question, and in many ways, the one I want to talk about the most. How consistent are our churches when it comes to preaching on, being clear about, and maybe even enforcing their teachings on sex outside of marriage when it comes to the activities of straight people? When there are a whole lot more of them in Southern Baptist church pews than there are gay and lesbian people. In other words, if you're going to say your teachings are that we oppose sex outside of marriage, no matter what, and that's how we would like the public to view this issue from our perspective, well, how consistent is your church being about that? Or do gay and lesbians, including those that are active members of the church and believe the teachings of the church, what if they get tired of hearing your church talk over and over and over about LGBTQ issues, and you're not doing a lot of preaching about premarital sex or adultery or divorce? and your church doesn't seem totally clear on how they want to handle cohabitating couples, you know, even if one of the two people in the cohabitating couple is a child of someone on the board of deacons, something like that. Our churches need to find out. I mean, they need to be clear about whether they are consistent on what they say, what they write, and what they defend on these issues. Or you leave yourself open to this statement from the Associated Press that someone was kicked out of the denomination because the congregation, quote, accepted LGBTQ issues. Now, you can look elsewhere and see, you know, different wordings where the RNS, the Religion News Service story, for example, said that two churches, the one we were talking about earlier and another, were removed for, quote, affirming homosexual behavior, unquote, in their standards for members and leaders. Now, the affirming homosexual behavior is inside quotation marks, and it should be, because that's what Baptists would say happened here, that the crucial issue wasn't just whether or not they welcomed gay and lesbian people and other strugglers and seekers and every whatever, but did the churches in a public way affirm homosexual activity? And then that refers back to my question about, well, what are the churches doing publicly in terms of whether they're being consistent about extramarital and premarital sexuality among straights? Is my point making sense there?
Yeah, I got a couple other questions here, too. I'm wondering, it sounds like the RNS story did a little better in actually saying it the way that the Baptist would say it, but I'm wondering, generally, does journalism have the ability to nuance the language here the way that the Southern Baptist Convention is going to nuance it? They're going to make a distinction between you're welcome to come here and worship, but we're not necessarily going to allow you the fellowship of membership. Do they even have those categories, the journalists, to work with?
Well, they tend to have those categories if they have professional religion writers who are writing the stories. In other words, in this case, RNS, the story was being written by a veteran reporter with years of experience covering Southern Baptist and a host of other denominations. And that meant this reporter probably knew, I need to go look up the statement, I need to get the exact wording for what they say. Now, the actual Southern Baptist Faith and Message document, frankly, isn't the best wording you could come up with. Let's see if I can find that exact statement and get it on my screen. They basically say they reject racism, every form of greed, selfishness and vice, and all forms of sexual immorality, including adultery, homosexuality, and pornography. Now, you could quote that as saying, thus, they reject homosexuality. When what Baptists would say they meant was they reject homosexual activity and behaviors and acts. And they would say that celibate gays and lesbians who come to their church and believe the teachings of the church, just like the same thing is true among Catholics, Orthodox, and I assume Missouri Synod Lutherans. You have people who they would say struggle with same-sex orientation to one degree or another, but they believe the teachings of the church. And the churches would say, those people are just totally welcome in our pews. Come join us as we struggle with our problems and our faults. But the big issue there becomes, how do you define marriage? Because that's what allows people to be sexually active with the blessing of the congregation and of its doctrines. So the real issue here is whether Southern Baptist conventions have embraced same-sex marriage and unions as within the world of the Bible and within the world of traditional Christian beliefs. That's the actual issue here. But as you can see, it raises a whole bunch of others.
Well, and then that was my second question. And does this notion, and it's certainly true, that there are LGBTQ members of Baptist congregations who still believe, live repentant celibate lives and still believe what the Baptist teaching is there and are therefore members in good standing, does that category of person, it certainly doesn't fit the cultural narrative about LGBTQ people. And I wonder if any journalism, any newsroom in the world would say, let's explore that category of people.
Well, they should. Now, I can hear people in newsrooms kind of, I can hear them thinking out loud, well, God, there's sure not a lot of them. How would we know? How do we know? I mean, throughout my life in the church, I've always known people that fit that category. And there are, especially among Catholics in the last decade or two, there have been a number of people who have spoken out very clearly from that perspective. And frankly, I think their criticisms of church behavior on these issues, especially the degree to which the church just pounds away at LGBTQ issues, and then, you know, that whole thing about cohabitating couples and whether we give them church weddings or whether we require them to separate for a year or, I mean, oh, we don't want to talk about that. That's really private stuff, and there are members of our congregation who might get their feelings hurt, and we may have powerful people in our congregation who have, you know, divorces in their past, and they may have strong feelings about whether or not we need to talk openly about adultery or issues of that, and whether that should be repented or publicly repented or opposed. Can you hear all the issues that get raised with it by this? It opens up a whole lot of other things. I will say this. If a denomination is going to make a public stand on issues of sexual behavior related to LGBTQ issues, I think they really need to sit down and examine whether or not they're consistent or even equal in how much they address parallel issues in the world of straights. And in particular, I've heard from pastor after pastor after pastor who would say, oh my gosh, if we started talking openly about either premarital sex among straights or cohabitation, my church would blow up. That would turn into a huge issue. All kinds of people would get their feelings hurt, and it would be out of control. So why don't we just kind of nuance that and deal with it quietly? And, you know, there are probably gays and lesbians sitting in their pews going, well, then why in the world are you talking about our struggles so much? Why are we hearing about that as if that was the issue that was going to overthrow the United States of America, when there are a whole lot more families being broken up or failing to form and marriages failing to occur because of these other issues? I'm just saying that churches need to think carefully. How will you explain what you believe to the public and to journalists of goodwill who at least want to try to get this accurately, not to mention the ones who don't want to try? How do you want to talk about these issues, and have you thought about whether or not you're being consistent or fair-minded? I think it's a good question for people to ask.
So, Terry, the Southern Baptist Convention has its own official press office, Baptist Press. How are they covering this?
Well, as you would expect, they quoted the Baptist documents, which meant they made a distinction about whether these churches were being disfellowshipped because they accepted homosexuals as people or allowed them to attend the church or welcomed them into worship, or whether or not these churches affirmed a married gay couple as a member of the church and active in the church, with all that that represents in terms of their affirming a different definition of marriage and affirming sexual activity. So it all comes down once again to this issue of, are you, quote, rejecting homosexuals, or are you clearly rejecting homosexual behavior and the redefinition of marriage? Now, lots of people are going to throw up their hands and say, well, of course, you know, gay and lesbian people are going to have sex. That's normal. If they're not, they're probably mentally ill. I mean, I've heard people say things like that, but when you actually talk to real people in the real world, you find out that there are people, like I said earlier, that these issues are part of their lives, part of their stories, and they still believe the teachings of traditional ancient Christianity on issues of marriage and sex. And they may be struggling with that. They may, that might be something the pastor knows, but they are not publicly opposing the teachings of their church. That's really what's at stake here.
Have we heard any press coverage of statements from SBC President J.D. Greer?
Well, he actually talked more in this case about other issues in the life of the church. And I don't think we should forget how loaded this whole issue of sexual abuse has been among Southern Baptists. Well, you know, with the massive Houston Chronicle expose and all the debate about that. And here we have churches being disfellowshipped, just boom, and they're out because they're violating kind of the Southern Baptist Convention's voluntary standards, but standards nonetheless, including a church that was kicked out because they have hired someone who's on their staff who's guilty of statutory rape. And then you have another church with, you know, with a similar case where someone linked to their church, you know, has been found guilty or admitted to crimes of sexual abuse. And the Southern Baptist Convention has said, we're sorry, you can't affirm that. You can't let those people be, especially not hire them on your ministerial staff. You're out. So that's a pretty hot button issue too. Meanwhile, Greer's major address, which I have not had a chance to watch all of it yet, and trust me, I will. He talked openly about divisions in the convention at the national level, state level, and local level, which really, if you read between the lines, he's attempting to address some of the divisions both from the COVID issue of worship and vaccines and conspiracy theories about COVID, at the same time as he's also clearly addressing political differences about Donald Trump and whether the convention should have allowed some of their staff members to criticize and attack Donald Trump. That's a big issue out there. And linked to that are conspiracy theories, QAnon, et cetera, et cetera. And then as if that wasn't enough, he then also looked at the arguments and divisions among Baptists right now about how to address the issue of race. And in particular, were seminary presidents doing the right thing when they said that they rejected parts, not all, parts of critical race theory as being essentially viewing racism through the lens of politics and social power instead of looking at it the way the SBC would prefer, as an issue of sin and the brokenness of the world and the fallenness of the whole world. Now, this has led to some African-Americans within the SBC criticizing the denomination and the seminary leaders for doing that, and a few who've left. While meanwhile, there are other African-American church leaders who remain a part of the Southern Baptist Convention. At this point in time, the chairman of the executive committee, the CEO of the Southern Baptist Convention, is an African-American pastor. So you've got, boy, was that an address or what? And I'm looking to see if the mainstream press is going to follow up with coverage of that. That's something I may end up writing a column about. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that was the sort of gangbusters address by the SBC president that we could see covered in a more nuanced setting like The Atlantic and its religion writer Emma Green. I could see some other reporters wanting to take on all of the fish he was trying to fry in that same address. It was a big deal, and I think we're going to hear talk about it behind the scenes continue.
Why is the Church 2 angle, hashtag Church 2 angle, not getting more traction than it is?
Great question. I think it will eventually, but I think in this case what we saw here was the SBC saying things we don't like about LGBTQ issues is a much bigger story than the SBC doing something that we're kind of supposed to like. In other words, do you want to devote more time to the SBC doing something bad from the viewpoint of many reporters, or do you want to devote ink to them doing something good from the point of view of most observers and reporters in terms of trying to be consistent? I think most reporters still want the Southern Baptist Convention to, frankly, violate its own polity and try to set up some sort of national structure to deal with issues of sexual abuse beyond this code that it's created that led to these disfellowships. But that gets us back. I think you and I have talked about this in a podcast last year. This gets us back to the issue that the Southern Baptists are not Methodists. Southern Baptists are not even Presbyterians, and they're sure not Episcopalians or Catholics. They don't have these large bodies of law and legal structures that can enforce things like this. And yes, I admit Southern Baptist leaders also know that the minute they create such a structure with the power to force local churches, regional assemblies, regional conventions, and state convention, the minute they get a structure with the power to do that, they're also then going to be financially liable for that. And that's going to raise tremendous issues concerning funding and insurance and all kinds of legal questions for the Southern Baptist Convention, because right now, from the Southern Baptist point of view, the buck stops with the local congregation, which then voluntarily joins regional, state, and national bodies. So that's kind of why I think that story got played down. Why say something good about the Southern Baptist Convention when you can say something bad about the Southern Baptist Convention? That sounds cynical, but I think that's what happened in the Associated Press story, at least.
For the last year, there's been a lot of buzz, positive and negative, about the possibility of a frequent guest on this show, Dr. Albert Moeller, being elected president of the Southern Baptist Convention. What kind of media coverage would you expect on that story?
First of all, I don't think it's a given now that he will be elected. I don't know. I haven't talked to enough Baptists to know. As far as I can tell, the other candidates for this position are pretty serious people, you know, in terms of giving him a race. So I don't think it's now a given that he will become president of the Southern Baptist Convention. But if he did, this is a guy, obviously, with a huge national platform among Baptists. And because of his years of experience in podcasting and radio work and writing commentaries, I think you could expect him to try to be very high profile. But we will see, because, like I said, there are other serious candidates for that position.
Do you think the media will cast him as kind of the second coming of bad news for the SBC?
I have no idea. He's pretty good with a quote. And one of the most important things for church leaders these days is, can you explain what your churches believe in ways that make sense to wire service reporters just as much as they make sense to the faculty and the board of your seminary? In other words, can you speak English instead of Baptist code language or evangelical code language? And frankly, the world is not full of religious leaders who are good at that. And when you find one, frankly, reporters tend to call them up more than they do people who don't seem to have a clue how to deliver a soundbite.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a production of Get Religion, part of the First Amendment Projects at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. If you appreciate this podcast, please make a secure, online, tax-deductible donation at getreligion.org.